Welcome to History in a Year, America's first 250 years.
Join us every single day as we journey from the Revolution of 1776 to the 250th anniversary of the United States.
You can find every episode and join the discussion at pointedwords.com. I'm Stephen.
And I'm Leah.
It is January 6th. Welcome to Episode 6. Yesterday, we watched the Sons of Liberty dump 342 chests of tea into Boston Harbor. It was a disciplined, quiet protest. But the reaction from London was anything but quiet.
When the news reached Britain in January 1774, the government went apocalyptic. To them, this wasn't a protest. It was property destruction and anarchy. King George III and Lord North decided that Boston had to be made an example of.
They believed that Boston was the head of the snake. They thought if they crushed Boston, the other colonies, New York, Philadelphia, Charleston, would be terrified and fall in line.
So in the spring of 1774, Parliament passed the Coercive Acts. In America, they were known as the Intolerable Acts. And today, we are going to look at what those laws actually did to the people on the ground.
The first and most brutal law was the Boston Port Act. It ordered the complete shutdown of Boston Harbor until the East India Company was paid for every ounce of tea.
Now, imagine what that means. Boston was an island, essentially. It relied entirely on the sea. The port wasn't just a business. It was the lifeline.
On June 1st, 1774, the law went into effect. British warships blockaded the harbor entrance. They didn't just stop big trading ships, they stopped everything.
Fishing boats weren't allowed to go out to catch cod. Hay boats weren't allowed to bring food for the horses. Ferries were stopped. The city was hermetically sealed from the ocean.
The economic impact was instant and devastating. Thousands of dock workers, sailors, rope makers, and shipbuilders were unemployed overnight. Merchants went bankrupt.
Travelers described the scene. They said the busy wharves, which were usually loud with commerce, were silent. Grass literally began to grow in the cracks of the cobblestones on Long Wharf. The city began to starve.
But Parliament didn't stop with the economy. They went after the government, too. The Massachusetts Government Act revoked the colony's charter, their constitution.
This was shocking. Massachusetts had elected its own council for 150 years. Suddenly, the king said, no more elections. He appointed a new royal council. He banned town meetings, the very heart of New England democracy, unless the governor gave written permission.
And to enforce all of this, they sent a new governor. Thomas Hutchinson, the civilian governor, was recalled to England. In his place, they sent a military man, General Thomas Gage.
Gage arrived in May 1774 with four regiments of troops. He wasn't just a governor, he was a military dictator. He moved the capital from Boston to Salem to isolate the agitators.
The atmosphere in Boston was terrifying. You had thousands of unemployed, hungry men roaming the streets. You had British soldiers camped on the Boston Common, drilling every day.
And yet, General Gage was surprised. He expected the city to collapse into chaos or beg for mercy. But they didn't. The Sons of Liberty kept meeting in secret. The unemployed workers refused to build barracks for the British soldiers, even though they desperately needed the money.
This is where the British strategy of divide and conquer failed spectacularly. Lord North assumed the other colonies would abandon Boston to steal their trade. He thought New York and Charleston would be happy to take Boston's shipping business.
Instead, the exact opposite happened. The Intolerable Acts turned Boston into a martyr. The plight of the starving city became a rallying cry for the entire continent.
It started with the committees of correspondence. Paul Revere and other writers carried letters to New York and Philadelphia describing the suffering, and the response was a flood of charity.
It's actually really moving. From South Carolina, they sent hundreds of barrels of rice. From Pennsylvania, they sent flour.
From Connecticut, Israel Putnam, Old Put, a legend of the French and Indian War, personally drove a flock of sheep overland to feed the hungry poor of Boston.
Even far-off places helped. We have records of resolves coming from small towns in the Virginia mountains, pledging support. They famously said, "The cause of Boston is the cause of America."
George Washington, down in Virginia, was furious. He wrote in his diary, "Shall we supinely sit and see one province after another fall a prey to despotism?" He famously offered to raise 1,000 men at his own expense and march them to the relief of Boston.
But it wasn't just food. It was political solidarity. The colonies realized that if the king could revoke the Charter of Massachusetts, no one was safe.
So instead of isolating Boston, the intolerable acts created a unified American identity. The suffering of the Bostonians made a planter in Virginia feel a kinship with a fisherman in Massachusetts for the first time.
General Gage sat in the governor's mansion, watching this happen. He wrote to London, basically saying, "This isn't working. The more we squeeze them, the more united they get."
And he warned them, "If you want to enforce these laws, you are going to need more men. A lot more men."
But the colonists weren't ready for war just yet. They wanted to try one last diplomatic effort. They wanted to meet, face to face, to coordinate a response.
They called for a congress of all the colonies.
Join us tomorrow for episode 7. The leaders of the continent travel to Philadelphia. We enter the secret meetings at Carpenter's Hall, where strangers become allies, and Patrick Henry declares, "I am not a Virginian, but an American."
You can find every episode at pointedwords.com. I'm Stephen.
And I'm Leah.
And this is our story.